Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. I am your host, Karema Mutlu. And on today's show, we welcome Jamie Strauss, who is the founding partner and director of Strauss Partners Limited, where he has specialised within the resource industry for over 20 years. Welcome to the show, Jamie.
Thank you, Karema.
Let's go back to the early part of your career and get a sense of how you started as a stockbroker in London and when you began to specialise within the resource industry. Tell us what it was like to be within the commodity space back then, Jamie.
Oh, wow. Well, it was completely different. I mean, one of the bizarre facts is that after this bear market that we've been experiencing recently, I really kind of got stuck into the sector with some background in it already. I'd actually been part of the team to IPO Randgold Resources, Mark Bristow's project at the time. But there was nobody. There was literally a handful of people in those days, where now, even after 10 bad years, we've still got quite a lot of people interested in this sector. So there was a handful of people. I suppose I earned my spurs when I really came across uranium at $7 a pound. And saw that all the way through to over $140 a pound. Selling my business, which I set up at the time, to BMO, and becoming managing director of UK equity product and through till 2009. So that was the kind of background to it. But it's been a fun sector the whole way through. I mean, it's never a dull day, is it?
No, certainly not. Okay, it'd be interesting to talk about how the mining industry has changed then since when you first began the industry. Throughout your career, would you say that the amount of capital being raised and which groups do that raising has changed over the years? And is there a shift these days for mining companies to look at more cost-effective strategies to minimize their risk by using new technologies in different and creative ways? I mean, does the resource industry need to become more creative in that sense?
I think that's a fascinating question, quite wide-ranging. So I think I'm alone by saying that the resource industry has been slow to change. But I think there is now significant evidence that it is finally being pulled forward. And I think you can look at that from really all facets of the industry, whether or not it's autonomous vehicles on the mine site, design of mines becoming much more clever, all the way through to finance and other forms like due diligence and other forms like that. So if you look at the structure and the fabric of the mining finance side of it, I think the most important change, which I think impacts a lot of the day-to-day being of this industry, is the entry of sophisticated investors, the private equity groups, the strategic investors, also royalty and streaming companies, which were really there first from the late noughties. So, and they have brought in a whole new structure and better controls with regards to all of their investments and due diligence. But your question also extended onto AI and technology. And I think we're really moving that way quite fast now. There are a number of conferences, as I'm sure you know, about the future of mining, and you can see a lot of these new products beginning to turn up. So I see the next 10 years as a kind of quick step move to try and get back ahead, well, maybe not even ahead of the curve, but certainly back up towards the curve, where places like the oil industry have really been dominating for decades now. So I think that's really quite exciting.
Okay, let's talk about the gold market today. And it'd be interesting to talk about what the bear market has done to the gold juniors in your view. Have a lot of the juniors that shouldn't have been around in the first place rightfully disappeared by now? And as a general rule, it is often suggested that the best teams will always be able to get funding for projects despite the market conditions. So what's your view?
Well, cycles are cycles, and the mining industry goes through probably some of the biggest cycles in the whole of the business world. And isn't it remarkable how robust some of these small companies with limited balance sheets, to some extent limited management capability and limited projects, actually managed to survive? But sure, look, a lot of them have been taken out and been moved into doing different things like technology or cannabis or whatever. But I mean, there is still a huge number of largely, and I don't mean this to be rude, but largely irrelevant companies which don't really have much of an asset base there, or too limited of an asset base to really understand what is there. But at the same time, our industry lives and breathes exploration at the end of the day in order to keep itself living. So one must not put down the exploration world. One's got to encourage it. And we need more of these people who you mentioned with regards to, you know, the best management's always being able to finance. I think even they found it very difficult. I mean, there are a number of people who I know who, you know, have gone through the last 10 years and found, despite very, very good projects, really difficult. I think there was even a pretty well-known example by one of Lucas Lundin's companies recently, where they did a financing, didn't get what they needed, and they put in quite a lot of the family money. So in the exploration world. So, yeah, I think this industry is remarkable in its robustness, and the people involved are amazingly robust in keeping things going. But we have had a clear out, and I think that's obviously extremely healthy in any industry.
Before the call, Jamie, we were having a discussion about the recent moves in gold and silver, and it'd be interesting to find out, in your view, do the mainstream investors, are they still sitting on the sidelines watching these recent moves for both metals? And what would signal to you that we are in another bull market for this space?
Well, I think we are in a bull market. I mean, I think, you know, that if you look at where gold has come from, I mean, is it 1,200 to 1,530 or 1,550 earlier this week? In the course of the last 12 months, I mean, to me, that is a bull market. Technically, you could say it broke out of where it needed to break out earlier this year at 1390 before it kind of really had that big move. But to all intents and purposes, a bull market is the definition of going up more than 20%. And so we've been in a bull market for some time. I think, are people on the sidelines? I think you have to break that down. You know, gold continues to be you know, you either love it or hate it. And there's a few people who kind of go from one side to the other, but generally you're in one camp or the other camp. But the specialists have been there. They're probably extra long at the moment. But the generalists, I think, you know, it's so difficult to know exactly where it is other than just looking at the open interest on the options and everything. Clearly they're on board. They can, it probably, you'd far greater, more intelligent people will tell you exactly how on board they are than I am. But surely, you know, if everyone had 1% of their portfolio in gold, we've got a lot further to go. But is it realistic? Probably not. So I think in my mind, the big question is, having had such a significant move, what are the geopolitical things going to do over the course of the next 12 months leading up to the Trump campaign for his second term? Clearly, he wants to get a lot of these things on his bucket list ticked off, whether it's Korea, whether or not it's the China trade negotiations, whether it's Iran, which are all the things that have been culminating along with Brexit and other things in supporting this gold market. So I think I don't want to pour a dampener on this. We're definitely in a gold market, bull market, but we've got to look ahead to see if these things are going to get ticked off. Is that effectively some respite for the gold price, which will perhaps find a kind of a happy median going forward?
I want to briefly touch upon the last uranium bull market, and you mentioned you were within that space. So how did you manage to profit from that space in terms of staying the course within that bull market with such dramatic price increases and such moves from the juniors? Do you feel this will happen for gold and silver eventually? And what advice would you give for investors?
Well, that's interesting. I could talk for hours on this because it was a really fun part of my life. But I think one's got to differentiate the difference. I mean, I think if you just look at the facts actually of the last 12 months, it'll kind of help put this into perspective. So there were 220 economic studies done over the course of the last 12 months, of which 72 were gold. Gold is, and that was really before this big gold market really got going. It obviously takes, you know, 6 months to a year or longer to put a feasibility study or an economic study of some sort into full works. And there were just six. And I think really what I'm trying to highlight here is gold is much more widely known, talked about. It, you know, it covers way more press than almost any of the other commodities do. And when I came across uranium back in 2003, uranium was $7 a pound. But we then had a perfect storm with regards to what happened. So the Greenies got on board where they suddenly approved nuclear, having been against it for two or three decades since Three Mile Island. There had been virtually no spot market. It was a monopoly. There was changes going on in geopolitical things with regards to the START Treaty, the old Reagan-Gorbachev agreement over the decommissioning of Russian nuclear weapons. All of these things coming together, and at the same time, a general move, which had already been started by China, but then being supported by the West as well, in order to build nuclear reactors, which has not really materialized except in China and other eastern parts. So, but at the time, it was all of these things that came together, and then you had the spark which hit the fan, which was, of course, Cigar Lake flooded, which was the big new high-grade mine of Cameco's in Saskatchewan. And that really sparked everything, which then moved it ultimately to where it was and frankly, to where it is now. I mean, it's all connected. And the difference between that and gold and to some extent silver is it's unlikely to get a unique set of events so specific with such a big spark to have such a big impact on a sector that is reasonably well known. So a general bull market can happen, but not to the extent that I think it happened in uranium. And for that, I would also add, having actually also told people to sell uranium at $140 a pound, I've never been back in it, and I don't see any reason to suddenly get excited again now about the uranium industry today. I'm not as close as I was then to it, but I just don't see the uniqueness of that scenario taking shape again, probably in our lifetime.
As we begin to wrap up, Jamie, is there anything else you'd wish to share with our listeners today? I understand you're heavily involved within the research side of the industry. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, thanks, Karen. I think where I came from about 4 or 5 years ago, so I mean, I've raised $1.5 billion over the last, whatever it is, 20 years in the industry. And I didn't have any special background education. I'm not a geologist, engineer, or metallurgist. But it was quite clear that with the onset of these sophisticated investors coming into the market and really changing the landscape for serious investment, not so much for the exploration world, obviously that's driven by its own dynamics. But what I was struck by was simply by the lack of real understanding of knowledge of the key risks of these projects. Mining is without doubt the most complex industry out there, along with maybe biotech and one or two things like that. And the lack of knowledge in terms of raising finance pre these sophisticated investors was really quite dynamic, shooting myself in the foot a little bit there, having profited from it. But the change of the sea change in the fabric of who's now putting the money into this industry has fundamentally changed and, in my opinion, improved the industry. And we have been beset by mistrust, bad execution, poor capital deployment for years or even decades. And I think now you've got due diligence basically as a new norm for the industry. None of these people, which I think account for 70% of the investments made last year into mining, none of these people do it without a proper due diligence process. So what I came up with about 4 years ago, and we launched we launched the free database earlier this year. It's just gone to thedigby.com. But ultimately, what we're trying to do is put a platform together, driven and powered by an expert, the first ever expert network of mining professionals, geologists, metallurgists, and engineers, to come out with a much more cost-effective, much more efficient approach to due diligence, ensuring complete independence. Paid for by the people who actually buy the research rather than it being given out or paid for by companies, and making sure it comes on and using technology, as goes back to your question earlier in the interview, Karen, the benefits and use of expert networks and marketplaces is standard in every other industry. And really, this is just the first move within the resource industry to try and bring us up to speed on that. So we launched that in November. The company's called Digby. And any of your listeners who want to go on to it, just sign up. If they're experts in their own right, then they can earn an income by doing so. They'll get 50% of all the revenue that comes in from the sale of their reports.
Excellent. Okay, thank you very much for your time today, Jamie. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Karen, thank you very much indeed.
Think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw material. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?